Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. What's good, everybody? It's our favorite time of the year here at the Black Effect. We're headed down to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
What's up, family? It's your girl, Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your host of TMI.
Tamika and my son's information, truth, motivation, and inspiration.
I'm getting the hang of TMI.
We got a little bounce to it.
A lot of people like TMI. Yeah. What's that? Nah. I like this. I like it. I've not had anyone say, I don't think, well, actually... My sister,
she likes
Sharon Mallory, was like, I like street politicians. I don't understand why.
I'm with Sharon, but you know, sometimes we gotta grow.
Yeah,
but I love street politicians. We always gonna be street politicians. Always. Always.
But I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it. What's up, family out there? Thanks for tuning in for yet another week of TMI.
You know, it's been a long week. It's been a long couple of weeks. A lot of things been going on. So I'm really just back into my whole workout thing. You know, probably working out like 3 or 4 days a week. And my body is just really sore. Like really, really sore. But I've been working out with my little brother. I've been taking him to the gym. And you know, a lot of these young boys think that they can really do it until they actually get in the gym. You know what I'm saying? You get him in the gym and he's talking, yeah, come on, we're going to go work out. And after about, we jog for about 10, 15 minutes. And he's like, yeah, I got this. Next thing you know, we do 2 workouts. He about to pass out in the gym. He drinking water every 5 seconds. He's sitting out breathing all hard. And it's crazy just to watch. And I see this happen all the times with younger individuals. They just think because you're older that they got more energy than you. And I be trying to tell you, y'all can't just come to that gym playing around. You know, it's a serious thing in that gym. So, you know, that's been the thing I've been doing, like really getting back into health, because health is wealth. Yeah. You know, I used to be a personal trainer. I used to do all those things. And probably the last couple of months, I've got that love for working out again. So you young boys coming to the gym with me, you better be ready to work out.
Love for working out. It's a little...
It's love extreme for me. It's love. It's a love thing.
I do it. I like it. But, you know, I don't know about loving it. But what I am doing that you know, I've really been focusing on for the last several months is really trying to find a balance between craziness at work and your own personal peace of mind. That has been, that's like the next thing. You get the workout together. I got the scheduling around that together. But now it's more so like how do you balance the two? Because I used to live by the idea that there is no balance. And I still know that the idea of balance sounds really good, but it's not necessarily realistic because at times, either your family life, your personal life, your work life, all of those things require a little bit more from everybody. So balance is real difficult, but you do have to have a balance over your peace of mind. And that through therapy, through going through so many trials and tribulations, I began to understand that the balance of peace of mind is not the same thing like balancing work and play or work home life. I'm talking about being able to control how much you sit and obsess over getting things done, responding to everybody, and how you could just be okay with the fact that maybe this person is going to be upset. I may not have shown up for all the things the way that people wanted me to, but when it got to the point that I felt it was too much, I pulled away. And that for me is a very difficult task. It's a very difficult task, but it's something that I realized I have to work on. And I would say it comes with the privilege, since we're talking about age. It comes with the privilege of age, because when you're younger and you're trying to find your way in the world, you just kind of like go. Not just young in age, also young in time in a space. Mm-hmm. So you're the new hairstylist, you're the new whatever. You going hard trying to get yourself known. Once you come to a place where you have already established a brand, you do have to find a way to back yourself up a little bit and also to have ability to get a vision for what life looks like going forward.
I think for me, you know, my experience and my life experiences, being incarcerated and losing out on a lot of things, a lot of different opportunities, I think my mind state, it's hard for me to do that, right? Because when you're 20 years old and you're on the cusp of being the next biggest hip hop artist, and then it's taken from you, and you spend 7 years in prison, right? You never get that back. You don't even know what it looks like, and then you become content with that reality. You just say, hey, that's what happened. That was God's plan. But you don't ever want to lose any other opportunities. Mm. So you don't want to stop doing anything or stop working while you're creating what you're creating. So you don't even know what it's like to be able to say, okay, I'm going to step back from something, because there's no guarantee. I realized in my life that there's no guarantee. Mm. There's no guarantee to anything. I don't think I'm in a position where I've created generational wealth. Like, if I don't work for a few weeks, if I don't do things or create things, there's a strong possibility that I won't be able to survive in real time. And I think a lot of us that come from, you know, what I come from, that's the way that we operate. So it's hard. So I hear people say it, and I see people do it all the time. And to me, it's kind of like a luxury, because it's a luxury that I would love to be able to just say, you know what, let me just deal with my mental. I don't even know what that looks like. Mm. You know what I'm saying? It's a real hard thing to do, because I want to be able to just, but every day I'll be like, okay, I got to figure this out, and I got to move in this, and I got to work, and I got to figure these things out. So, you know, it's a lot.
Well, I think that it's also a tool of white supremacy to make us believe that we have to be on a hamster wheel all the time. Because I think management of our time and management of our money better, because we as Americans and probably everybody over in the world, there's so much waste. If we really just look at like the difference between how often we cook, which by the way, groceries is ridiculous, but just saying, how often we cook versus how often we eat out, You know, whether or not my dad will say in a minute, y'all need to learn how to do y'all own hair. Like, why y'all always got to pay people to do your hair, whatnot, right? So I know we're not going to do those things. It's not going to happen. It's our guilty pleasures and whatever else. But if we just look at how many times we drink during a week or two, how much gas we spend without just walking to a place or whatever, if you add it up, you will find that there are resources there for us to be a little bit more like, okay, I don't have to kill myself. But we want to live with the luxuries of life. It's actually the opposite, in my opinion, of what you're saying. The luxury is that we want to have these things and go these places, because I'm not going to miss one thing that somebody invites me to that I want to go to. So I have a schedule from April all the way until July. People, my cousins, this thing, somebody having this, that I want to go. So what am I going to do? In order for me to get there, I got to spend money. I got to be able to pay my credit card. I got to be able to do all these things. So it does make me hustle. But if I just said, you know what, I'm just going to sit at home, make sure I do the bare minimum, and then I could focus on my mental health and whatever, I could actually probably do that.
But I hear what you're saying, and I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's cool.
But is that actually you doing what you want to do, right? Because if you're saying that I'm not going to miss none of these events, right? Because that means that you want to go to the events. You
but know, it's a sacrifice. Like that's
what
I'm saying.
So you're sacrificing what for what? You're sacrificing
for your mental health.
Comfort, for your mental health.
Well, yeah, because mental health is a different type of thing. I'm saying that. Yes, your comfort is a part of the enjoyment that helps you find peace. But if you are working yourself literally to death, where you are not able to calm down and relax for a minute and have days where you just lay still or you just sit quietly and you're not on the time clock of I got to answer the phone, do the thing, get it, that is a problem. It's an issue. And it's a lot of us. It's not just a Black thing. It's not just whatever. And the reason why I say it's a tool of white supremacy is because we have been taught that being an overachiever is what makes us a great example of, you know, whatever. And that mindset is actually not helpful. It's also a tool of white supremacy to make us believe that we have to be perfect, right? Perfection, all of these things, they have been tools that make you feel like you're a failure when you're actually not. You're not a failure because you're not, you it's okay to be missing sometimes from the conversation. You don't have to be at the front every time. It's something that we're driven by because we believe that if we're not, then we're going to be out of, what do you call it? Out of sight, out of mind.
But it's also what we see, right? It's what we celebrate. It's who we celebrate, right? The people that we celebrate and we call successful in our culture are the people who are always present, right? Or when they're present.
I don't know about that.
When they are present, it's damn near flawless.
But that's the thing. And that what you just said is exactly the point. And thank you for bringing it home. It's that sometimes the more you do, the less quality that it is existing it because you don't have time to prepare, right? You're moving from one place to another. I've been in that where I'm moving from this place to that place. I feel tired. I'm not myself. I walk in a room. My speech is not finished. I don't feel as confident. But when I have time to focus on the big things, and that's why shout out to Marvette Brittle, publicist and brand manager forever for a whole bunch of people from Mariah Carey, the, you name it. She's worked with the greats. She would tell you that it's important. Like you can't take everything that comes your way. And a lot of times we find ourselves, we want the $1,500, the $3,000, the $5,000, the $20,000, the $25,000. And instead we should really be, again, sacrificing and saying no to some things, not the things that's important to you. Some people don't got money to pay you a lot, but the things that are important to you, you have to do. But the things that are not, you kind of say no sometimes so that you could focus on being your best self when you do get the $10,000, the $5,000, the $25,000 speaking engagement. Because if you're running yourself ragged, you're not showing up as your best self. So I'm just trying to figure out what that looks like. Because what we do with this work that is constantly trauma and going, it's not easy to tell a family or not to be present in places, but I am finding a way to be okay with not being there and not sitting at home beating myself to death that, oh my God, I should have gone. I should have done it. I should have. Why didn't I? Because I would make myself feel bad. So anyway, it's not something I have an answer to, but my therapist says that it is very necessary, because if you don't do it, you find yourself spiraling backwards. And then his other point has been that when you finally get to a place where you can't, where you're not in demand or you're not whatever, you don't even know what to do with yourself at that point because you're so used to being out. So you have to train yourself that it's okay that sometimes y'all don't hear from me.
AT&T Connects and Ode to Podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it! Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
You know, there are many viral videos out there that shows bouncers, club bouncers, Lord, security, body slamming people, doing whatever. I've had my own, you know, I have literally gotten into almost physical altercations with a number of bouncers. And I've had experiences that other people that I know or places that I've been, they have been significant issues. And of course, as I said, there are viral videos. I think it was a video just in April with some women was into it with the bouncer or the bouncer, whatever. And the bouncer started slamming them, went out into the parking lot to continue to deal with whatever. Once they get you out the venue, it should be done from their perspective. and now you're in the street. So then at that point, there should be no reason for a bouncer to even be behind you or with you at your car or down in the parking lot or any of that. This last week, a young person that I know in Atlanta was beaten and followed, by the way. Even the Uber driver says, no, I was already outside. I watched it. It didn't just happen right outside the door. Three bouncers followed this young man into the parking lot, which was disconnected from the bar where he was, and they commenced to beating him up and whatever. And it all, I understand that when you are in an environment where people are intoxicated, if you don't maintain a certain level of discipline and control over a space, it could get out of hand. It's unsafe for everybody, including you as security, as well as other patrons. Things could get completely out of hand. And people do drink a lot. So when they go out, you're not as, and I know it's happened to me, you're not as aware. Your self-awareness is certainly tampered or whatever you call it. It's not at the level that it should be when you have been drinking alcohol, right? And then some people are doing other drugs. So it's a lot of things that goes on, right? However, there is an issue with the emotional intelligence and the level of de-escalation skills that bouncers have across the country.
It's a fact.
And it is a problem. They start more shit than they actually do to diffuse and keep things under in control. Now, there are some places where there are bouncers and very, very much I would say that one of the groups that a group that has a group that has produced many of the bouncers that we see out here, people who are supposed to be security or whatever. One of the groups that has produced lots of them is the FOI, which is the Fruit of Islam. They have, and you can tell when you are being approached by someone that is FOI who is working at a club. You can tell the way in which they speak to you, sister, you know, I need you to calm down. You guys have to move out the way. They're not to say that they're pushovers, because we all know they're firm, but it's a certain way that they deal with you and you can tell. But these other people that somehow are, I don't know, and I need to do, oh, by the way, I'm going to do the research because I'm going to be the person that is going to fight for whether it be legislative changes or for there to be some way that people can hold. No, I want to see venues held responsible for incidents with their bouncers in a stronger way. It's not as much as it should be. There are a lot of these owners that either close the door, don't answer the phone calls, and their security people are treating people with a level of disrespect that is not okay. It's not okay.
That's a liability. So they should be liable. If you're doing something where you're violating people's rights,
absolutely,
the club should definitely
be. And there should be a way to determine when people's rights are being violated. I believe that we may even be at the point where at a lot of these popular nightclubs or whatever, some of these bouncers need to have body cameras on them, because the way in which, and by the way, the terminology bouncer, I don't know where it came from, because this is all the research that I'm seriously going to do. My friend's son, he's a young boy who is not problematic, and what happened to him is dead wrong. And by all accounts of the people around, the bouncer was an antagonist. He was basically picking on this young kid. And I have seen it happen so many times.
I've been a victim of it.
And the way in which you know, people, especially when you know people have been drinking, you have to actually get your tone and the way in which you're approaching them in a manner that allows them to feel respected while being able to move them. I don't know who's training them. I don't know what accreditation they have or how this is happening. Have accreditation, but right? it must change.
And then it's different criteria, right? So you got the guys that are just big. So they just say, hey, you can be the security here. They don't have any criteria. Then you got off-duty police officers who don't.
Who have the same mindset as the on-duty ones that we already have issues with.
So you're dealing with those things right there. And they think they, especially when they're in that situation, they just think they're all way above the law. They still got the street element because now they're outside and they're not tied to the uniform as much, but they still know that they got their badge. So they dealing with you from that aspect. And then, like you said, people are intoxicated and nobody wants to be told to sit on the line or wait or move. So you got to understand that. And there's no real training. I'm telling you, I know people who've been bouncers that's never done anything. It's the bouncer at the club.
That's not, you know? That to me is unhealthy. It doesn't work. And there has to be some way that is changed. And I am going to investigate and be reporting on what it looks like. And I know there are a lot of people that's like, oh, there you go. Like you now all of a sudden, you know, here you come into an environment where these people, some of them just coming home. Some of them are coming from different situations, can't get this job, need extra pay. And I think we should do all of that. I think that, that as a space that especially a lot of men are in where they could get income, I support it 100%. But it does not mean that people need to be abused or that you should be able to bring that nastiness that too many of these people have and the way in which they treat people. There has to be. And I think that, yes, absolutely, the actual security person needs to be held accountable. But the way to actually address it is to make the owners of these properties, owners of these clubs, make them responsible when these issues come up. And going forward, I'm going to make myself available to be more involved in cases where people feel they have been harmed, discriminated against, or whatever, because that's a call. That in the past, if I get a call about, you know, a bouncer beat me up or something happened, it's not necessarily something that I would get too involved in because I don't have the capacity. But I am definitely going to make myself available going forward because I hear about it too often. And when people are like, well, the patron, they was drunk, they were wild, they was doing all this. That is what happens when you work somewhere. And it's the same thing that we say about police officers. If the police officer and the civilian are acting the same way and carrying on the same way and have the same attitude, and the civilian is or the police officers responding to the civilian without the professionalism, then what the hell do we need the police officer for? The point of having the police officer is you've been to the training, you have a weapon, you have a responsibility. So when you pull over a civilian who is late to work or not in the mood, or maybe they have done something wrong, it is not your responsibility or even your privilege to be the judge, the jury, and the executioner in some instances right there on the spot. You have a job to do where you are supposed to be professional, and it's too many of the culture of the security guards, because by the way, a lot of people don't have power in their own life. Mm-hmm. In their own world where they traveling from one place to the next, they have no power. They have no power. So therefore, when they get into environments where they've been given a little badge or a flashlight or something, now all of a sudden, you the big guy. And because you got muscles or whatever, or some of these females, because you're in a position of power, now it makes you feel you have the right to be disrespectful and harmful to people. It's correction officers. It's all of those people that are in that lane around security. And it's so many cops that are on the beat at night at these clubs that they end up becoming friendly with the club owners. And therefore, when you have a complaint, they don't even want to go. Like in this particular situation, the young man was abused and the report says nothing about what he stated. They automatically called him the aggressor. And if it were not for the Uber driver saying, no, I saw it with my own eyes, he would have nobody to back him up.
Yeah.
Because you know the club's going to say they lost the footage. They don't have the footage. It renews every night. And he wants the bouncer arrested. He should be.
You know, I've had a lot of experience with bouncers in the club. You know, a lot of them go way above and beyond. A lot of them want to impose their will, especially when you have some level of notoriety in the name. They want to show that they're tougher than you. It's a lot of things that go into that. And I think definitely, you know, the establishments need to be held accountable for that. Mm-hmm. They should be forced to hire the proper kind of security.
And train them.
There should be protocol. There should be training. There should be, levels of de-escalation, just like anybody else. I want to give a shout out to an officer who pulled me over this morning. Mm-hmm. I was fumbling with my phone and a little bit of traffic on the George Washington Bridge. He pulled me over. And I explained to him, hey, I was fumbling. I was trying to get an address. I apologize, And he looked at me and he was like, I'm going to give you a warning, man, because you're respectful. And, I don't want to hold you
that's
up.
That's how we act, too.
And he's like, you just need to be more careful, more mindful. And I said, I appreciate you, officer. And it was respectful. And so it just goes to show you that it is possible. And there are officers. I don't know the officer's name, but there are officers who respect you. He probably doesn't want his name. But he had his camera on, so he wasn't out of the scale. He didn't do anything illegal, but he just realized, I have the discretion to be able to give you a warning based on the way that you handle the situation, based on just the situation in general. And it shows that there is the possibility that there are officers who understand.
And of course, there are security guards.
Exactly. Like you said, a lot of them give us a lot from the nation. Like I go to spots, and I see the nation's security, and the first thing they say is, hold on, brother, how you doing?
Give me a minute.
Give me a second.
Yeah, don't be, brother,
There's no levels of aggression. These are big, strong dudes. They're not soft, but they humble. How you doing, brother? Could you give me a second? Could you move to the side? Because we're dealing with this. And I have no problem with, just...
Having respect.
And reissuing that respect. So, shout out to the officers who do it right, but... But we got to hold accountable those who do it wrong,
For sure.
So that brings me to my music segment. This is one of our newest segments. And we highlight music either from up-and-coming artists or established artists that has, a positive message.
Positive or a good message?
Well, I think it's good and positive.
Okay.
Or it's reality-based. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Because I think a lot of music is not reality-based. And being an artist, I know that positivity doesn't look the same to everybody.
Right. Exactly. You understand what I'm saying? Because some stuff, I'd be like,
So when I thought about Slipping and Falling and DMX's song, him telling his story, and how you related to that, damn, I went through all that. Some people are like, damn, the situation to them might have been crazy, but it was something that I was able to relate to. You know what I'm saying? It was something that a lot of people from our communities were able to relate to, and it actually got you thinking outside of just, the normal things that we see in our communities. And it woke you up to certain realities that people are dealing with. So this song right here is from, one of my young boys, Fabio Foreign. And it's called Story Time, and it's him telling a story about a guy that's in the hood. He gets locked up, and he goes through all types of things in jail. And I want you to go look at the video if you haven't seen it. So I don't want to give the whole story away, but it's a real compelling tale that if I was a young boy and I'm following the drill scene and all this, and I hear Fabio, who's one of the premier drill artists. And he gives this perspective, it will make me just listen, damn.
What's the name of it again?
It's called Storytime.
Storytime.
Storytime. Go look it up, man. Shout out to Fabio for this video. Fabio's, like I said, he's one of my young boys. I always kick it with him from time to time. Sometimes he's a little, he goes on the cusp with saying some things that I don't always agree with. But I'm into cancel culture now. Cancel culture. So a lot of times I sit and have conversations. I might DM him and say, hey, just understand that this is what your platform is. And when you say such and such, you're inspiring and motivating these type of people or these type of activities. Mm-hmm. So I do that to him a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, every time we have been in space with him, he seems to be just a good guy, a nice, kind person. Of course, when I heard him say, recently, first of all, I'm gonna go listen to Story Time so I can be up on these songs. I think it's like you said, it's a message. Whether or not everybody thinks it's a positive message, or I'm not saying Story Time isn't, I'm just saying whatever in this segment, the message, whether you think it's positive or not, sometimes it's just what someone needs to hear in order for them to make a change or to keep going in a difficult situation.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast.
Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit nfl.com/schedule release to learn more.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer, and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great-looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection, and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
So for our Women's History Month segment today, I'm really into this topic because, you know, online there's a lot of people who have so many opinions. You know how I feel. I feel like every week I'm talking about the opinions on the internet, but there's a difference between the opinions of those of us who are somewhat more mainly inexperienced in areas and people who actually have experience, who are actually doing business and who have actually grown businesses from start to finish and really, you know, got themselves into these places that become a beacon for the rest of us who are working towards it. And so today there is a Black woman that we're bringing on who has a brand that is well known to Black people. You're not gonna really know, even though she might have some tips for you too. But
I don't need no tips.
You don't know?
It's not my thing. You... I just put a little bit, you know, a little pink lotion in my hand.
Yeah, it's not, no. Anyway, that's see, it. This is why I can't. I'm just telling you. I really can't. But we are—
my grandmother's recipe.
Just because your grandma— anyway, can we talk about
that? Grandmama said it, that's what I did. That's it.
So we're bringing a beautiful woman on today with us, Mahisha Dellinger. And Mahisha launched Curls, a beauty brand that began in 2002. I know Curls, like all the girls know Curls, especially, you know, Black women who have natural hair or like to wear their locks and their curls. She started this brand in 2002 from her home in her garage in Sacramento. Mm. And at the time, there were no textured brands, like textured hair aisles So when you go into the store, you know, they got everything for everybody else but us. But that's changing. And I like to think, and I'm sure, you know, as we bring Mahisha on, she can talk about how her brand was one of those to sort of begin the process of people paying attention to the kinks, the coils, the curls in our hair, our actual natural texture. And today I'm really excited that this woman who has built an empire of estimated to be over $20 million in this hair care world in 100,000 stores.
Wow.
Huge, huge. So let's welcome our guest, Miss Dellinger, Miss Mahisha, to the show today. And I love it too, because she's got a black name like Tamika, Mahisha, you know what I'm saying?
We're black.
Thank you for
We're black up here. Happy Blackity Black Month.
Yeah. And we just finished Blackity Black Month, and now it's Happy Women's History
Month. Yes, Happy Women's History Month to all my beautiful black women and otherwise.
Red is your color, sis.
Thank you, darling. Thank you.
So tell us. I mean, there's so much that we could discuss. We ultimately want to get to this idea of, you know, black folks be like, why we can't just keep all of our stuff? Why we got to involve other people in our stuff? And, you know, every time we see the Miels and the Main Choices and others, these brands that really came behind you, right? Mm-hmm. When they scale, they sell, you know, people feel a way about it. They feel the product has changed. They feel so many things. And we want to get into that. But before we go there, talk to us about your journey. Sacramento in the garage. To get to where you are now, you had to have some faith and some talent.
Yes. Well, it was a lot of faith and a lot of frustration, obviously, in corporate America, because I was dealing with a racist manager at Intel Corporation that targeted me and was hell bent on getting rid of me, despite being an exceptional employee, despite, you know, killing every single level of achievement I was supposed to, despite being the first one in, last one out, I was targeted. And so when I was put on a corrective action plan to get rid of me in 6 months, I was a young single mother without anyone to look for to help me. My mom loved me, but she couldn't provide any resources. Her dad left me when I was 6 months pregnant. It was all on me. So that really changed how I viewed corporate America, how I viewed, because I thought before that I was going to retire from Intel. I was a proud Intel employee. I was looking forward to doing all the things and just scale up that ladder quickly. And I was disillusioned really quickly, right size, left size, ostracized in corporate America, and realized that that wasn't the path for me. So that experience ultimately led me to my destiny. And so I thanked this gentleman on Facebook because I saw how he, you know, he steals an Intel. I found him and sent him a two word Google or message in Facebook and said, Google me, because I wanted him to know that what he tried to do wasn't going to happen. I actually scaled to where I needed to be. So I thanked him for that. But, you know, my journey was one that was because I felt my back was against the wall in corporate. I had no one else to fall back on. I had to find another path. And I was newly natural mother, as I mentioned. I had a young daughter, was looking for products for me and my daughter. The aisle, as you mentioned, and for us was non-existent. And the options we had were like pink lotion, grease, Jericho juice, all the things we used growing up. And sometimes my hair would look cool. Sometimes it would look like a Jerry curl. Sometimes it looked like all whatever, right? It was never consistent. But most importantly, I wanted something that was natural. And she was young. I didn't want to put all the chemicals on her hair. And that's how it was birthed. So the frustration of corporate America, the lack of options on market, and being a consumer myself, that trifecta brought together the birth of curls. And I don't think that without that experience in corporate that I might not have stepped out into that path. But I was pushed because I saw that in 6 months I was about to be let go. And I had to start working out the path to get to something else.
Mm-hmm. So what was that journey like? I hear the path. So when you first, what was the first thing you did? Because just hearing, okay, you know what? It's not there. Like a lot of people, especially people in our communities, we feel depression. Like we want to do things, but we see the end and we're like, it's too hard. I can't, I got to do this. I got to do that. I got to do this. So what did you do? Like, how did you just start and just get up and say, look, I'm going to look? Did you do some research? Like, what was that process like?
I'm going to tell you that process. Before, I want to say, though, that the Black female entrepreneurs are the fastest growing segment of entrepreneurs because we are so disenfranchised with corporate that we're finding other ways to make our livelihood happen. But what I did was I started by doing my due diligence, which was my research. And I wanted to see, one, what does it take to start a business in hair care? And the first thing I learned, of course, I needed was a cosmetic chemist, someone that was going to make the formula, the recipe, right? And finding that person, I was like, okay, cosmetic chemist, awesome. Where do I go now? So I went to the Society of Cosmetic Chemists and joined that organization and met some chemists and interviewed through that process. And then from there, I found someone, and Gary Galante, I'll never forget his name, Gary Galante. And I hired him, and we started with four initial products, just four. And we went through the process of R&D, which looked like, let's talk about what you want in the products. What don't you want in the products? And then he would sample them, send me batch samples of each, like 8 or so or 10 of each of the products. I would test them, give back feedback, and then we kept going. That was a 9-month process, right? Until we got it perfected. And along the way, as he was doing that, we created the website. We started to design the logo, the labels, picking packaging, all that. So during that whole process of R&D, which is 9 months, I'm doing everything else also. So then we're ready to launch, right? April 2nd, turn the switch on the website. And it was funny. I had 8 orders that day. I was like, woohoo, I have 8 orders. Yay. I was so excited. And that was the beginning of it. It was an e-commerce only journey for a few years, several years. And so one thing I do when I mentor my mentees, do not think when you launch a product and have something in the market 2.5 seconds that you should go straight to retail. Retail can wipe you clean if you do not have a good structure in place, if you don't have the turns. Every store every week has to sell a certain amount. If you don't keep up, they will delete you. And with that deletion comes a bill that will hit you in the pocket that could take your business out. So I did it the conservative and strategic way, which was .com for a while, built up my demand, my consumer base, understood her needs, wants, and demands, and what she was looking for, what she was missing. So we instantly went from just 4 to 8. We brought in a kids line. And then from that, we grew it to like 25. And then we kept going. So 25 meaning between 2 lines, a kids line and adult line. And then we perfected them before we're ready to be exposed on that level. So take the time, and I always say this, take the time to, while you're kind of obscure, to get those things right and understand your market, understand that you have enough of a base to support retail, and then go pitch. And that's the approach I took.
And you use your products on yourself and your daughter for a while before you decide. And I'm sure friends or whomever was in your space that you could use it on. That's another thing that I noticed, that there are a lot of people who want to sell a product and they're so quick to try to get it out there, right? But it takes time. It sounds like you were baking for a while and figuring it out. And I think social media has really, unfortunately, given us the impression that the timeline can be so quick. And it doesn't give people an opportunity to build their business beyond their product. Like, you may have been using your shea butter mixture for a while, but that doesn't mean that it's ready to be sold to other people and that you have the capacity to take on what it looks like to have an actual business. I mean, I think that's what I hear you saying.
Absolutely. 110%. You have to have the systems in place. You have to have operations solid. You have to have a strong consumer monthly demand every single month. You have to get to a point to know that when your slow months are, if you don't know that already, then you haven't been in business long enough. I'm slow between January and February, or I'm slow October, November. That's the time to re-up or do, you know, more investment. Or I know that, you know, that my customer base is 18 to 25 and therefore they need XYZ from me. If you don't know your base, your processes, who you are, who you're selling to, and what your levels of commitment could be to a retailer, because they're going to expect a lot from you, then you're not ready. And I just had someone come to me that went to retail, and her company brought them in after George Floyd, right? They created this, you know, this whole accelerator program for Black brands. And now fast forward to today, no more focus. She's an indie brand in a sauce business. She has a wing sauce brand, and they're deleting her. So the support went away. She's getting deleted. Now I helped her negotiate to not have that chargeback fee I told you about, that when they delete you, they come for your pocketbook. I helped her negotiate that out. So she's at least exiting without that big bill. That doesn't usually happen. But we're going to use that story and her experience to teach. So we're going to have this big, we're going to do an event to talk about retail readiness with a buyer that buys for a national retailer, so that we can help other brands, Black brands specifically, know how to do this right.
So I want to ask another question before we get kind of into that. You know, you started your business before there was really like a big internet presence and a lot of internet marketing. And that was in 2002. Do you think it's easier now, or do you feel like it's helped your business, or was it a lot better for you before it was internet because you were more into it, or there was compared to?
I think it's definitely easier. Back then, there were, you know, you couldn't go hire an influencer or influencers to support your brand, your launch. It was definitely a lot more guerrilla marketing if you didn't have the dollars supporting you to do the heavy marketing, which I did not. So it was a lot of definitely going where the consumer was, a lot of sampling, et cetera. But definitely it was before MySpace. I mean, think about it. So it was a different approach then. And so the brand grew over time. And so now, you know, after over $180 million worth of sales, you know, over the course of time, we've seen the different the lifespan of this industry, from the lifespan of the industry to technology to how to go to market. It's changed substantially. And
what
so
was your one marketing, of the things. What was your marketing tool then? I feel like it means your product must have been and must be, and of course I know it because I know your product, like you're a legend and your products are legendary.
Thank you.
But you must have had some real good shit, because how did you get, you know what I mean? It must have been a staple brand for people to love it the way.
Well, you know, a lot of things that people that we did then at the beginning was a lot of sampling. We not those little packets you get when you go to like get in a magazine. No, I mean those premium 2 ounces. We invested in that because that's going to give you one enough of experience to feel it, right? But we know that if a Black woman loves something and she loves it, so she'll buy it again. So we needed her to experience it. So we invested heavily in sampling and then went to where she was, right? So whether that be, you know, concerts we're sampling at or events, wherever Black women were, didn't have to be hair related, just where our audience was, that's where we would be. And so we were on the ground a lot, and we had lots of Curls ambassadors that were out in all the different cities doing a lot of sampling. And, you know, no requirements to do anything. Here's, you know, the product, tell you about it, how you're going to love it. It's great for your hair, what to do with it, and where to buy it. And that turned over to continual and repeat customers.
You spent a lot of money.
Yeah. And I think it's an investment. I'm always, you want people to really experience the brand, but then as they got to love the brand, you had to bring it back to what is the brand offering for me beyond just a product. So that's where, you know, bringing that DNA of the brand owner into the product. For me, it's giving back to Black entrepreneurs. And I created my Black Women Making Millions Academy. That academy helping women become millionaires is to help them, when you launch a product, usher them to and through success. So that's a part of the DNA. What else am I going to do for my consumers besides give her a product? Well, I can help her. She's the fastest growing segment of entrepreneurs become successful through this program. So, and it's something I was doing before Curl, or before I became successful during Curls, helping people with their businesses. So I think it's twofold, and people really buy into when they see something authentic, right? You can't get that from a Pantene. You're never going to be the touch of Pantene, you know, the founder of that. You're not going to be the connect. They're not going to care about the community. And I think supporting Black brands and Black brands are giving back should be where we place our money.
So that brings me to my question. So we know that Black brands have, you know, I listen to Kanye a lot of times. And although Kanye's a lot crazy, but he says a lot of things mm-hmm. that I realize that there seems to be a ceiling for Black brands. There's always mm-hmm. a ceiling for Black brands. And no matter how big you are, you don't reach to be the Pantene. You know, they don't allow you to do that. And a lot of times what we do is we merge with other companies. We merge with bigger, you know, parenting companies. And sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. What do you think is going to take as somebody who's done probably everything possible in this business, is going to take for Black businesses to emerge without the help of other, you know, other organizations,
Other people.
Collaboration. Bottom line, we're going to have to be able to work together the way that other communities do. We, unfortunately, don't do that well yet. Some do, but I strive not on a big enough platform to impact change. If all of the people, say, think about all the how many billionaires we have in our community. I know there are not a lot of billionaires in our community. How many millionaires? How many multimillionaires? Like, it has to be a strategic approach to this, that we want to build something that we can, you know, influence others and also build others up. I think Rich Lou was trying to do that, right? But we need more than just the one, right? How many are doing that? You know, like what if Beyonce just created her hair care line, right? I don't know if you tried it yet. Okay, what if Jay-Z and they're not cool anymore, but Jay-Z and Kanye came together and created some sort of platform that could bring together a whole bunch of Black brands under that umbrella and lift them up and bring and give them a level of education, a level, the access, the resource, the tools, whatever they need to get to an acquisition, right? From maybe another Black brand. What if Magic Johnson bought Black brands instead of all the different brands he's buying, and Shaquille O'Neal, and you know, the people who are investing in other white brands, we need them to invest in the Black brands. That's what's going to take, collaboration.
Okay, so I like that. I mean, I see a lot of pushback about the mergers and the acquisitions, as you said, online, right? As we mm-hmm. see some of the ladies and men, but it's generally, as you said, at this point, a lot of women brands, once they get to a particular place, they're looking to scale. They're looking to sell their business. Especially, you want to sell while you're hot, right?
Right.
Because that's the time when you're going to be most successful. Mm-hmm. But there are people who feel like, why do we have to sell outside of our community? To my son's point, like, and we know we don't have Procter & Gamble's. Mm-hmm. We don't have those big things. Would you say, like, what is? I want to articulate properly what I'm thinking. It's like, what's the point if you build something and then you just have to sit in your small studio with it? Is it not the point that you're trying to grow to the place where you become a multi-million, if not billion-dollar brand that hires your own people, that allows other artists, talented, whatever we want to call them, chemists and all the things, to then therefore start their own brands? But I think that a lot of people don't know, is that even possible? Once these folks come in, they buy you, are you still in a position to grow other smaller businesses once you get to that place? Or do you just kind of like get knocked out the box and now it's just your face and someone else is running everything?
Well, it can work different ways depending on whatever structure you put in place, right? But you could, for example, say, I want to say before I go into an answer, when you create a business, you should have the end goal in mind. You need to know that. The exit plan should be known when you launch. So if my plan is to launch a brand and I know that in 5 years, 10 years, I'm going to scale it and sell it, that's fine. Or is my goal to create this business, have generational wealth and have my children take it over? That's fine. Whatever your plan is, you need to know what the exit is, because we don't live forever. You know, right? We're not, we have mortality here. So figure out that exit plan out the gate. But can you like sell a brand and then scale others? Absolutely. It's a choice of deciding how you use your resources, how you use your talent, how you use your treasures, right? So as you sell and you make your change and put some in your pocketbook, are you reaching back to help others? Are you going to, you know, bring another business or two up? That's a personal decision. And that's what I hope that we are able to create. And that was to my other point about collaboration. We need to find a way to do that. And each person has their own way and their own approach. And for me, it's always been to whom much is given, much is required. So I have been doing this before the sale. Now I can do it on a larger scale. I'm able to help more businesses with free resources and make when people partner with me, they know they're gonna have to give back to my community in some way. So it's gonna come with the territory. We can ask that. When you're on at the top of your game and you have buyers wanting you, you can then put that into your deal.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah,
you can negotiate what
absolutely.
You want. Right.
Yeah. And so, if you're talking to me and you're bringing something to the table, you better believe you're going to expect something that's going to be given back to my people as well, because that's just a part of my DNA.
So what do they control, or is that something you can negotiate also, the integrity of the brand? Because I think that's the critique that I hear the most, is that people feel like when they love the product and then it sells, and now it's not the same product anymore. Talk about that process.
Well, if you say your brand is sold and they come together, and usually these people are bean counters. So they are counting the beans at a higher level and go, okay, it's costing you, Mahisha, 50 cents to make this amazing conditioner everyone loves. But if we move it over to China, we can make it for 12 cents. We're going to save X amount of million a year. We're moving to China. They can do that. And a lot of times those bean counter decisions can negatively impact the business, the brand. It can negatively impact the experience of the customer. And sometimes they don't care. So you have to be involved at the level where you go, I'm not changing my formulas. I'm not changing my people. When Comer Cottrell sold Proline back in the 80s, he was one of the pioneering brands, you know, of our time, right? Black brands. He sold all the, you know, hair food, all the hair grease that we used to buy. Comer Cottrell. When he sold to L'Oreal, he put in his deal that all his people had to go to L'Oreal with his company. So you can do those kind of things if you're looking out for your people, your brand, your products. It's a matter of sometimes some people may say no and walk away from the deal. You just got to, you know, see if you're really about that life or not.
That's what I said. I said, you know, for me, because we was having a conversation and I'm like, for me, like when I like a brand, you know, there's certain things I like about the brand. And what I notice is a lot of times when certain brands that you get when they're in the infantry of, you know, their production, the quality is just different. You know, and then once it's taken over by corporations, it just lacks a little bit of a lot of quality, certain things that you enjoy about it, you know. And so I understand. And then which we was talking about, we understand that the price points and, you know, the company gets it and they're trying to figure out how they make the most money to spend the less. I just think for me as a consumer, you know, we want to keep the things as pure and natural from the beginning of it. So my last question for you is, what advice would you just give someone just entering into this that's, you know, ambitious as you are, you know, based on mistakes, based on the things that you've done that's right? Just one good piece of advice that you would give.
Absolutely. But before I do give that, I want to say that I don't want to scare someone away from potentially selling by saying that your formulas could be impacted. If you have the right partner that cares about it, you can have a great experience where your brand is not impacted in a way that they're going to change your formulas, because that hasn't happened for everyone, right? So I just want to make that clear, because there are people who care about keeping that integrity there. And so if you're a brand owner and looking to sell, just do your due diligence. And this is to my answer. If you're looking to sell, I have a few different pieces of advice. If you're a product owner and you're looking to sell, my biggest piece of advice is to court them like you're courting and dating for a potential husband or wife. Pray about it. Number one, lay it before God and see what their intentions are for your brand. Don't be so thirsty to take what you see on paper, but get an understanding as to what they plan to do with their brand. Now, they're going to come with the money. But what happens after you sign on that dotted line? Are they going to protect what your legacy created? That is one thing that you want to be sure of. So you know, do your little happy dance when you see those zeros, but make sure you keep integrity of your brand. Now, if you're starting out as a new brand owner or of any company, the biggest thing I say is definitely do your due diligence. This sounds simple, but really a lot of people tend to have a great idea and then go to market. And I see it time and time again. I mentor a lot of people and I have to remind them to like rewind it backwards and do your research to see, is this a sustainable business? How many, is it really, it's a great idea, but do I have customers for it? Is there a customer demand for it? That's research. That's going to be you diving in and figuring out who my competitors are. And if there aren't any competitors, that could be a good thing, or it could be a sign that that's not a need for that product that you have or service. So before you launch, because 80% will fail within 5 years, make sure to take the time to dig into that research. And then another thing I want to say is your operations. So many great business leaders that I see that have so much potential and great products, but the operations, it's like building a house on sand. The foundational work isn't done. And so you're spending money without knowing that you've overspent because you're not following these POs or knowing how much you should spend. And you're just throwing money at problems without knowing what you're doing. So the operational foundation has to be in place and strong. And I think that that comes with sometimes lack of experience, but also from us always feeling like we are matriarchs and we should do it and go it alone and not asking for help. Ask for help. Don't be prideful. Don't be prideful. Ask for help for things you don't know. You shouldn't know everything. You shouldn't. If you know everything, then you probably spread too thin. Hire people smarter than you to give you those answers that you need. The operations will matter. You can make 20 million. And if you spend 19, then what have you done? Okay. So I think those are two biggest things for a brand new owners. But then, you know, I would love for us to also find a mentor that's really invested in your growth. Join a program like my Black Women Making Millions Academy. That's what we're doing, is really helping women get to success. Find a way to find people like you that you can touch and tap into.
Yeah, you know, and we have to wrap, and I know you have to go. Thank you so much for your time. Ahisha, I'm sitting here thinking as you're talking, and you've already answered this question, but the woman or the younger girl, woman who's in her garage right now, doing what you did, starting where you started, what would you say to her about the journey and having to have that faith to keep going when you just don't know if it's going to work out?
I would say to her, keep going, baby girl. The harder you work and the more committed you are to your path and your journey, and the more open you are to receive help, you will get to where you want to be. Just don't be discouraged. You will have bumps along the way. It's part of the journey. Just receive it. But most importantly, do not let any of those challenges or failures disrupt your heart or make you feel bad about yourself. Don't take it personally. Make sure you separate your being and your feelings from those failures. And remember that failure isn't final. Failure is a lesson and a part of the journey.
Wow. Amen.
Legendary. Legendary. Mahisha Dillinger.
We appreciate you, Queen. Continue to
Thank
be great.
You.
And you deserve all the flowers.
You do.
You know, you've been doing this work for so long. And I know the brand, even though I don't, you know, men don't really mostly use it. But I've seen it in sisters, mothers, everybody's household. Continue to be a household name and continue to break down barriers and lead.
Men can use her.
I mean, we really don't want
they
to.
Do.
They do. Yeah. I mean, they do.
And
okay.
They do, look.
Well, they do. You guys take it from the women's showers and stuff.
Right.
They use whatever.
I know I've used it once in a while. I know I've used it because I've seen it in the shower and you just put it in. But it ain't, you know.
Whatever. You're saying it hasn't been intentional. Well, we got the word for that.
Okay, they got the curls. I'm like, Dad, I don't know how you're supposed to use this. You sneak and use it real quick.
Thank you guys for having me. This was a pleasure. I had a good time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thank you.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family, like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
A lot of people gatekeep as
they do.
You know what I'm saying? So just listening to her, you tell her she's very intentional about wanting to, you know, pass the knowledge forward and, you know, leave a legacy and see someone else be successful.
I mean, she talked about when signing deals, you have to make sure that you put in your deal that this partner, whoever you're working with, whoever is purchasing your brand or whatever, that they have to give back to your community. And oftentimes we're so, I will not judge everybody because sometimes you just don't know. Mm-hmm. And that's one area that while we have learned how to be good workers, we've learned everything as Black and Brown people about being good workers. And we get some of our leadership qualities from watching how our grandmothers and grandfathers and how they had the little restaurant in the community and they did, you know, washing clothes for people in the backyard. Like we know, but no one has really sat us down and taught us business, like real business. You can go to business school and even we know, be going to these business schools.
But I want to say, it's a lot of, before there was business, there was people who was leading, there was people who created. So the business model, I think that's something that has been created, but I think the leadership and the willingness to do it has to be something that you're born with. Yeah. I don't think you could teach someone how to lead. Like you, if you're teaching a bunch of followers how to lead, they're never going to be able to lead. Like I've seen people who you know, are in position of leadership that just really, you'd be like, I don't even know how you're in this position because you're not really leading. And then I see people who are not in position of leadership that you can just tell are born leaders because they lead innately because they just do what comes natural to them because they understand that the time is to lead. So, you know, you can teach people business.
Well, I'm saying business. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying that we learn leadership because, like I said, our families have always owned the local restaurant, the, you know, like I said, cleaner services. Shoot, without even having an actual cleaner's building, our families, we had elderly people, or at that time they weren't necessarily elderly, but they were washing clothes for the neighbors in their yard or in their home. Like, we have always had businesses.
Yeah.
But learning how to operate a business, she talked about operations. That's a very important thing. We know so many of our businesses, you try to go online or you try to get your hair done or your whatever, and people don't have good business acumen. They just don't. Mm-hmm. Their business skills and their communication and keeping the time, being timely, you know, just all of that. It's off. It's off. The products, how they send things to you, making sure they follow up. It's really a challenge. And I think more, that's something like what she was talking about. And you can tell this is a woman who knows what the hell she's saying.
But it also goes, just listening to her story, right? She was working and she was doing, and then she woke, realized that, no, I have to do something different.
Right.
Like, that's where the leadership, because the business, like, it's so many different, you know, situations I can talk about. I was listening to an interview today about Anthony Davis and Charles Barkley has said he's just never been a leader. And he's always been the top scorer on his team. He's always been, you know, the premier player. But he just lacked the leadership quality. And he never wanted to be the leader. And he said, he's like, you know, I don't have the demeanor. I don't have all the things that people might say is a leader. So I don't lead in that way. But I don't want to not be a leader. So a lot of times people are pushed in positions that they're not supposed to be in. But then a lot of times there are people like her who identify leadership, and then they grab on to the business acumen. They get taught about the business and they want to learn.
Right.
If
you don't run the business of your home properly, mm-hmm. more than likely, if you start a business, it doesn't transfer well. You know what I'm saying? So you have to, and that's what I'm saying. Other communities from young, mm-hmm. they are learning about business, and they are around and in environments that teach it as a second language. Like, it's just a part of their everyday. As Black folks, mm-hmm. we don't necessarily learn money management, because right?
As creatives, right? Because we if you look at Black people just historically,
we're very creative.
Very creative. So we are so engulfed in the process of the creativity that the monetization of all those things, we don't even think,
that's why I always say it's important for us to understand from whence we came to know where we are going, right? I truly believe that, because in all the environments that I've been in, where my teachings have come from and the study of our elders, they always talk about understanding where we came from. Mm-hmm. And this is important. The creative side of us was exploited. So mm-hmm. they always encouraged us to be creative, right? Because they needed our creativity to build every damn thing that this world, everything we have. Somewhere along the line, African people or people of African descent were involved in how it came to be. They did not want us to read books, though. Mm. Right? They did not want us to learn business acumen or to learn how to operate business, because they did not want us to be educated in that way. So that's why I'm saying that other communities is just a part of what they do. Mm-hmm. I think about when we think about Linda, right? Linda Sarsour, our dear Muslim sister. And I just think about the way in which her mind works and how much she has taught me over time. You know that she was raised in a household where learning how to operate businesses, how to deal with money, you know, money management, all of that. That's something that was very, very much so ingrained in her. Then when she brings that to us And then we have all the other components. It builds the soup. The pot is rich and it's great. But I'm just saying that's not something that they ever really wanted us to learn. Mm-hmm. It was actually stripped from us on purpose so that we would only be able to work for the man and help them build what they wanted to build.
What it was is you took advantage of something.
Right.
You seen how a person was, you know, pretty much a cash cow. You're like, wow, this person is so talented. Right. They don't even know how talented.
So it's my right. Exactly. They don't
understand that they worth millions and billions of dollars. So I ain't going to tell them. You know, I'm going to get them there. I'm going to say, hey, sign this. You know, you with me.
Yeah.
We good. We're going to be good. Right. I'm going to take care.
And they pay your bills. And you don't know how much you actually worth.
Exactly. By the time you realize that they done had $100 million and you done had $500,000. And you
that happens
it.
all the time.
The music industry, all the time. And it's just like, you know, I think we're at a stage now as just, you know, as creators, as business people, just as just individuals that we understand.
Oh, we're coming up. You have economic development becoming a part of the second language of us as well. Now, I mean, we're teaching kids. They are a program. I promise you that as soon as my granddaughter is able to talk, to speak well enough and understand, she already understands. But to speak, she is going to be in some type of class for little people, knowing how to use money, how to save money, and how to even invest. There are kids out here that are learning that now. And I love how Black people are developing and growing in this area. But I just want us to be clear that as people are listening in, don't think that there's something wrong with you because you don't know. You need to be aware that this was actually designed to be this way, where we would only be as good as to help build something for somebody else. So, yeah. So what you don't get today?
So as we talk about music business, you know, there's been this online chatter ever since pretty much, you know, Killer Mike won the Grammys. There's been just a lot of chatter here and there. They were talking about Nas winning the Grammy at the last Hip Hop Awards. And I'm at the Grammys, and he won the last Grammys. And it's just been this chatter. And it was based off, you know, something I heard Gilly say, and who also is an elder rapper. And he was saying
he's a rapper.
Yeah, that's Gilly. Gilly started out rapping. Yeah, he started out rapping, and it's something that a lot of people say, and they don't see why, you know, older hip hop artists are getting awards, why they don't stop. And for me, what I don't get.
What do you mean? Why they don't stop?
Why they don't just pretty much stop rapping? They want. It's been a thing.
Gilly didn't say that.
No, it's not. He didn't say that, but he's saying that.
Okay, I'm just trying to get.
No, but this is a common theme, and it started out when we, you know, like, oh, nobody want to hear the old rappers. Y'all too old. And what I don't get, as starting to be old and realizing that I can actually out rap most of the young dudes, and my mind is sharper. You know, it's not like a sport where you're playing sports and you physically can't move, your knees hurt, you can't jump as high, you know what I'm saying? You can't play on the court that long. You can see that you're diminishing in your skill set. Why in hip hop is the only genre of music that we think that our artists, as they age, have to disappear, or we want to discredit them, or we want to say that they need to retire? Like, you know, in all time, I've watched Kenny Rogers win awards at 70 years old. Winning Paltrow is still getting great. Like, so for me, it's like, why do hip-hop artists and people of the hip-hop culture want to tell older hip-hop artists that they need to stop? Or they don't give them the same credit that every other form of music gives their elders. So, you know, I just really don't get it. And I think that we have to move past that in hip-hop, you know, because first of all, it's a lot of older rappers that will rap a lot of younger rappers around the pole, you know, and just there should be levels of respect, right? If somebody's been doing something and they have a level of skill and they've been doing something for a long, there's a level of mastery that comes with it.
Right.
So not to acknowledge the mastery that comes with age in an art form like music is crazy to me. Like, those are people you should want to learn from. You know, you should want to sit up and listen, because they've probably forgotten more about hip hop and about rap than you probably will ever know. The things that I've learned over the last 20 plus years about music that I didn't know, that I possibly couldn't have known, that I was taught by elder individuals, that people like DMX taught me about cadence and taught me about inflection and taught me about, you know, just doing so many different things, of double and triple entendre, just taught me about everything within hip hop, the things that you can learn from somebody that's been here long enough. Like, you should want that. We should never want to violate the pioneers and people who've done something.
Well, when you say violate, because it's the
list. It's a violation, because if you're telling... I
would say diminish.
Well, I think it's a violation to me, because if I've been... If it's like your grandmother, right? Your grandmother, you don't know nothing, grandma. That's a violation to me.
Well, I listen to some of this commentary in different places, and I don't think that people are saying you don't know anything. I think they're saying that as the younger generation is coming, getting old, you know, the younger generation is coming into their own. Mm-hmm. There needs to be things and a celebration of their art form as well, right? And that at some point, which I do understand, you give people flowers when they're in their prime, and therefore it makes room for more people to be acknowledged. I think one of the biggest issues, and I think we're talking about sort of two different things, is that the Grammys in and of itself is just way too important.
It's not so much, I don't even think it's that. I think what it is
I think it's important, but it shouldn't be as important.
And it probably shouldn't. But the thing is that the hip hop artists we're talking about now, they created what it is to win a Grammy in that category, right? So this new sound and the subgenre, the new kids, they have to define what that is. Like, you got to create your own. When hip hop first came out and they was doing it, it wasn't accepted in the Grammys. There was no hip hop awards at the Grammys.
Right, they didn't even have a segment.
Exactly, and they still fighting for that. So what I'm trying to say is, in order for you to be celebrated for what it is that you do, you have to make what you do something that they feel like they need to celebrate.
So the BET Awards is not...
No, it is. It is. And that's what I'm saying. Yeah, so what happens is the BET Awards takes at the new genre of rap that they come, they have their own categories, right? That's why you listen, you very rarely are going to hear older rappers in those categories, because it's more pop music and it's more what's popular to the new, the culture right now. And contrary to what the world has already gravitated to. So what has to happen is, I think that the young artists who are paving their way and get hot, you got to get hot in Europe. You got to get hot in Germany. You got to get hot in Dubai, right? The sound that you have has to go over there and be like...
But it does.
No, I'm saying...
Because the pushback that I got on the Killer Mike piece was, he can't be better than Drake. Right, which, you know, now there's debate about whether Drake is even hip hop, but whatever.
But Drake was never even nominated for the Grammy.
But that's the thing, right? So that's what they're trying to say. They're like, why would, which because, by the way, I still think Killer Mike, I know that because, he deserved it, but I'm just saying.
What happened is this, let me explain to you. There's pop music and there's Grammy music. There's substance music. Like, Drake put together a body of work that was to just appeal to people who like pop music. There's no real substance in it. It's dope music. When you listen to it, you can go to the club and go, but there's no direction, right? There's no movie in it. There's nothing in this in Drake's new album that's gonna tell you something about Drake we didn't know before. That's gonna make you feel like, damn, I connected with Drake on a different level. Mm-hmm. When you listen to Grammy music, it's just like going to the Oscars. When they want you to play a role that when they look at it, people identify. People might cry about it. People are like, damn, dude, that touched me in a different way. So if you just putting out a body of work that's, okay, I know the sounds that everybody want to hear right now, I'm going to put together all these beats, and I'm just going to put some dope raps on there and put the features that I want to put on there. That's not what the Grammy looks for. The Grammys don't look for that in music. So it's not saying he's better than Drake or not better than Drake. It's just the body of work that he put out wasn't a Grammy-nominated body of work. And there's a lot of artists that make good music. I'm not saying that they don't make good music. I'm just saying, if you're looking for a criteria that comes with the Grammys, there's a certain, they explain to you. The guy who, the one who, you know, is the Grammy, the person who was in charge of the Grammys, he broke down exactly what they look for when they're looking for albums in the Grammys, when they're looking for songs in the Grammys. If you are not checking those boxes, you will not win a Grammy. So what I'm trying to say is...
Well, that they're not always right.
I'm not saying they're always right. Of course.
And it's racist.
It's a lot because, you know why? Because hip-hop culture is Black culture. Black culture is... Mm-hmm. Black people are 13% of the population. That's just the reality of what it is. And it's moved past that. The reason why they have to acknowledge because we've infiltrated mm-hmm. into every other population. Mm-hmm. So what I'm trying to say is the new subgenre of hip-hop has not integrated that far into the culture, to different cultures yet. They're still designing what the drill music is, and they hear it and it's played, but it has not infiltrated into the culture like pure hip-hop and what we call pure hip-hop is. And that's why you see a lot of this pushback from pioneers of hip-hop. They're saying, well, you know, that's their music, but they need to call it something different. Because it just doesn't have the same appeal. It doesn't have the same
feel. Everything, I mean, over time, all things develop. Well, all exactly, I want to say is this one thing.
We don't call
right
blues
here.
Music and R&B the same thing. Blues and R&B is something different. And even though they came from hip, R&B came from blues and it came from rhythm, but they don't call it the same thing. They don't just keep putting everything in one category. And mm-hmm. I think that's what the problem
but
is.
But drill music is different from hip-hop.
Exactly. But
so,
that's
what you, so you wouldn't get nominated in the category because it's hip-hop.
Exactly.
Well, then the Grammys is wrong because they should be making more categories. I'm going to find a way to make it that they need to do better.
They do, but the thing is, also, we need to do better too because you know what? If they not respect, they're just like, if they don't respect what you do, you got to go do it harder. If you're going to be the MVP.
You could go create your own and really focus on it. But that's a whole other. And when I say your own, I'm talking about your own award shows, your own like investment.
Celebrate.
And the thing is, people have to actually show up. Take it seriously.
Like I told we got to create it.
People have to show up. They have to take it seriously, be invested in it the same way they are when they win the Grammys or how people
but
go
you
to gotta the
make
Grammys.
It feel like that. If you created something and you expected somebody to be more serious about what you created.
No, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that the experiences, like these award shows and what we put into it, right? Because you'll hear people talking about the BET Awards. And a lot of people go, and people do take it seriously. I'm not saying they don't. But it'll be like, you know, it's like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to the BET Awards. Now you got folks showing up at the BET Awards dressed like, in, you know, I don't know what this stuff is. I don't know. You're not going to the Grammys with that same attitude. When people go to the Grammys, they act like they're going to the biggest moment of life. Like, this is it. So we have to approach our own things. It might not be the BET Awards, but whatever it is, which I think it should be, but it doesn't have to be. Whatever it is, we need to approach it like it is that type of quality. Because when we put that much interest into it, the world will recognize it. And therefore, we get an opportunity to acknowledge and do all the things for all the different genres and all the things that our people are interested in. But when we are so quick to celebrate and to uphold so high something that's been created by somebody else that made their definition of what it should be, then we're beholden to their standards. So
I agree with that 100%.
There's that.
And with that said, I don't know, first of all, we want to thank our guest.
Yes. Mahisha Dellinger. Of Curls.
She's amazing. Just what she's done, you know, and I know she's inspired so many others to do the same. So continue to do what you do, Queen. We appreciate you. Another great episode.
TMI.
You know what I'm saying? Formerly, Street Politicians. New name, new show. But the same us.
Tamika
Mallory Reed. My song. Information. Tamika Mallory's. Never
why
always.
Do you have to say my whole government?
Yeah, Tamika D. Mallory, actually.
No, but that's not in the title. The title is Tamika and my song. It's not Tamika Mallory.
Oh, it's not. You're right. It's Tamika and my song's information. So
we'll get it together.
I'm not going to always be right. And Tamika's not going to always be wrong. We're both always, and I mean always, be up there.
Peace.
Salute.
That's how we own it. That's how we own it. That's how we own it. That's how we own it.
Check out the video version of TMI
every single Wednesday on iWoman.tv.
That's how we own it!
There's a lot of pros to drinking Health Aid kombucha. No cons that I can think of. Pro, amazing taste. Pro, pairs well with anything. Pro, probiotic. That's a literal pro. And it's deliciously refreshing. It's the perfect pairing to your meal or great on its own, whether you're having Pink Lady Apple, Berry Lemonade, or one of the other great flavors. It's the perfect swap for soda or alcohol. Make it part of your daily routine. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid Kombucha today.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family, like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Nobody wants to outlive their money, but it happens, especially for women. That's why Gainbridge offers the Parity Flex annuity, designed for women's unique retirement needs, with flexible withdrawals plus a guaranteed lifetime income benefit that keeps paying you even if your account balance is zero. Gainbridge is helping build a better financial future for women. Retirement income you can't outlive is the ultimate flex. Start saving now at Gainbridge.io. Visit Gainbridge.io/ParityFlex for current rates, full product disclosures and disclaimers, and other important information.